Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and on every Monday, I am here to talk quilting. It is so exciting. I've got some really, really fantastic guests. First up is author and quilt maker Carla Alexander. She writes these amazing books that are all about making quilts where you stack things and you move them around and you do all this really fun stuff. And so she has a fairly recent book with one of her techniques, and I thought it'd be fun to have her come on and tell us a little bit about how this all happened and how fun it is. So thanks, Carla, for being here.
Hi, how are you?
I am wonderful. I am so excited that you're here. So,
yes.
And we finally connected. Yeah,
yes,
right?
Yes, we did. We finally,
I know. So tell me about this latest book because, let's first do this, Carla. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the background of the technique? Because the technique is something that's really fun to do.
Okay, so the stack cut and shuffle technique it's been around for years and a lot of people do it. And basically, I always begin with squares and rectangles rather than strips of fabric. And so that enables me to always go to my stash and use, you know, light colors and stuff. And so I stack rectangles or squares all right side up on top of each other. And then I take a cut through it, like if you were making a four patch, for example. And I've stacked like two lights and two darks and maybe made a horizontal and a vertical cut. And then after making those cuts, I shuffle the pieces around, till each layer looks like I like. And then I sew them back together again.
So how long have you been doing this type of a piece quilt?
It's just been my passion for about the last 12 or 15 years. It's just how I love to quilt. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to begin with just like looking at squares, like I said, rather than having to have a whole bunch of yardage. Mm-hmm. If I want to do a blue and white quilt, then I'll just, you know, grab a whole bunch of blue squares and a whole bunch of white squares.
I think that's fascinating because my brain doesn't think that way. So I'm really, let's talk about it even like a little bit finer detail. So when you're, you know, getting the squares and you're getting blue and white squares because you want to make a blue and white quilt, are you already in your mind sort of piecing this quilt as you're pulling fabric?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Are you already sort of in your mind, like doing the fabric layout, like piecing the quilt in your head as you pull fabric look at it?
Yeah, so I kind of will begin with a design in mind and, you know, maybe I want it to look traditional with a little bit of a twist or maybe really abstract. So I begin with that, and then I decide on, you know, a color, combination. And usually I work with lights and darks, or, you know, I could do like a contrasting, but usually lights and darks. You know, for example, if I wanted to make, you know, a quilt with, say, you know, 40 squares, 40 mm-hmm. blocks, then I would start with 20 light and 20 dark squares. And so that enables me to, you know, just keep looking, and maybe I only have one square of that light plaid, and I can go ahead and use it. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of get my head, wrap my head around the quilt like that. I kind of do have a design, picked out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as far as, like, there's a word I use that I kind of made up called inchage. You have yardage, mileage, right?
Right,
footage.
Right.
So inchage. So, you know, I get up in the morning and I have, you know, allowed myself to make and create a new block almost every morning just because I kind of can't get to the computer till I touch the fabric, right?
Oh, wow.
So
that's
a good plan. Yeah, so I'll take one just square of just, you know, leftover fabric and I'll cut it up and I'll sew it back together and check out the inchage. So that means I know what I started with, like a 10-inch square, I make these cuts, what do I end up with? Mm-hmm. And then I go to work from that point forward.
Now, I imagine the fabric is really key to making these stack, shuffle, and slide quilts spectacular. What are some tips that people can that you can give people for how to pick the right fabrics that will make it successful?
Well, I always choose my fabric. I kind of have an interesting way to do this. I always, kind of get an idea of what colors I want, and then I get four or five of each colorway, and I pin them up on a design wall, and I walk away. I call it the 10-foot rule. I walk away, and I also have something I call the eye cleansing, where I turn around in a circle, and I just try to look at a whole different color. Like, say I was working with blue and white, then I will look at reds or look outside at the blue sky or, you know, the grass or whatever and get kind of reset my eyes. And I'll spin back around and take a look at the fabric, and immediately you can spot which one will work and which one won't. And I just kind of go to down like that, adding and deleting and adding and deleting until I like the mix. And then just go from there. And if you need to wake it up a little bit, I always love to throw in a white and black print. That always kind of seems to electrify everything a little bit. Or if I want to tone it down, you know, maybe I'll pull those out. But my rule of thumb is, like, if I have one kind of interesting fabric, to try and have two more. So I always have three, you know, working in sets of threes rather than twos. And that way when I put it in the quilt, you know, I kind of have a more of a random layout that doesn't look like just two pieces of that one fabric.
Now, are you using a lot of prints that have multiple color, or are your prints sort of more limited in color?
So that's a good question. So, you know, I call it tone on tone, or do they appear as a solid from a distance, or, you know, with a lot of variety in the fabric. So it depends on my quilt. And so if I'm making a quilt that has big pieces in it, and the actual area, you know, of the piece shows a lot, you know, like 3 or 4 inches, then I want that fabric to do the work for me. And so often I will choose a fabric that has a lot of, you know, design in it, maybe all, you know, different colors and stuff like that. But if I'm making something with smaller pieces, then I'm going to attack my stash with the tone on tones, or, you know, pieces that appear as a solid from a distance. And so it really depends on the quilt that I'm working on. And like I said, if I'm doing a quilt that has great big huge pieces in it, then I really want the fabric to do the work for me. And I really want to choose kind of busy looking prints that when I stand back and take a look, you know, they look either light or dark.
I think that's a really, really good point, is the bigger the piece of fabric, you have a lot more of it, you know, in the block then. So I guess I didn't say that right. The bigger the block size, I meant said it reverse.
In the area of, you know, I think I learned a lesson. I went and taught in Ireland one time, and I came home and I decided I was going to make a quilt, you know, that, you know, reminded me of that. And I realized at that point it's the percentage of each of those colors that make a huge difference. You can't have an equal amount, you know, of colors and expect it to look like a scenery. So you have to also be really careful with that, on the, you know, percentage of like blue and yellow or white, you know, that you have in a quilt. If you just wanted a touch of yellow, then you can't, you know, have most of your blocks have yellow, you know. You have to kind of stop and think about that as well. So that was kind of a good lesson that I learned.
Wow. Yeah. Going to Ireland to learn it. Gee, that's a nice thing.
That was fun. But, you know, you come back, and like I said, and Italy too, you come back and you want to make, you know, kind of peach and orange and green quilts. And, again, you have to realize the percentage that's in that picture that you took that you're trying to replicate, you know, might be, you know, there might not be a lot of it in there. So when you make your quilt, even if you chose all the colors, you know, identically to your photograph, you may have, you know, equal amounts, and in your photograph there may have only been like 20% of that color. You know,
that's a really, really good tip.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a little bit about making the project your own, because you're a huge advocate for people taking your designs and really putting their own stamp on it, so that it does, you know, not, you know, they can certainly make it just like yours. You know, we all understand that, but, you know, tell me a little bit about how you work with your students.
Well, so I encourage, you know, they come to class and it's always difficult because they've followed the, you know, supply sheet and tried really hard to, you know, do what I did. And so when they get to class, just kind of giving them permission, it's like, you want to throw that print in? Well, let's take a look at it, let's audition it, and first of all, see if it works. And then, you know, let's put it in there, and if you like it, you need to put it in there. Now, maybe there's a different layout. I put my blocks like this. That doesn't mean you have to, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I always encourage them to, you know, maybe I have a curvy border. Maybe you're making this for a little boy who that doesn't seem right. Let's you know, switch it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that they find their way. And this light kind of comes on in their eyes. It's like, oh, you know, can I do that? Well, of course. You know, it's your quilt. Make it your own. And, you know, make it your quilt, not my quilt. I think that's really super important. And, you know, just kind of encouraging students along the way that, you know, sometimes you make something and you don't like it, but you learn so much from it that you know what you're going to do next time.
Right. Put it on the back. You can put that piece on the back.
Yeah. People say that a lot. You know, and I always tell people to trust their gut, too, because I get so many people who say, well, so-and-so talked me into using this fabric, and it really worked. Well, when I do lectures, I ask for a show of hands how many people use some weird, crazy print that they really hated that someone talked them into it, and then I ask how many of them it worked. It's amazing, like 20%, you know?
Yeah.
So if you don't like it, don't use it. You don't want to make a donation quilt.
I totally believe that. You're not really probably ever going to like it. So there'd be that rare 20%.
Or, you know, the thing, we'll quilt it out. No, you know what?
Right.
If you don't like it, don't use it.
Right.
And you're the boss of all that now. You know what? You're a grown-up, and if you bought it for that quilt and it doesn't work, don't use it.
Don't use it. Now, you actually, speaking of using things, to end up here, the segment, you actually use all of your quilts, you told me. Just love to have them in motion in your home. How does that work?
So I have a nice downstairs area that was finished into like a big living room, and I have a huge shelf with all my quilts on it. And the ones that I'm, you know, touring around with and lecturing with, I have, you know, upstairs in a different area. But the other ones that, you know, have kind of seen their lifetime, they're just all downstairs on shelves. And when I have company, you know, we just pull them out and use them. You know, I mean, there's nothing worse than a folded up quilt that never gets to see the light of day.
Yes.
Right?
That's
to be a quilt.
True. Carla, this has been so wonderful.
Well, thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And you can visit Carla at SaginawStreetQuilts.com, where you can find your teaching schedule and all of her books and her rulers and everything else. So, Carla, thanks again. And I hope to see you maybe this fall.
Yes. Thank you so much.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and American Quilting and Patchworks podcast. I'm Pat Sloan. So I have another guest. This is Melanie Testa. And I can tell you, when I first met her, I knew I was going to just love her to pieces, because when I went up to talk to her, I'd met her, but when I went to talk to her, she was elbow deep in dye. And not only that, she was at the trade show in her booth. This is like, what a woman. She's in there dyeing fabric and doing all this crazy stuff. So I thought, oh, she has to come on and tell us all about her fabric and what she does. Melanie, thank you for being here.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm really excited excited about it.
I was just so thrilled to meet you at the show, and then you are just so fun and so creative. Tell me a little bit about your background, because you like paint.
I do like paint, although I love dye. So
yes.
I started quilting when I was 19 years old. I took a local art class, and I learned Log Cabin, Rose of Sharon, and Grandmother's Flower Garden. And I just fell in love with fabric. Mm-hmm. So I created a portfolio. I decided that I wanted to become a textile designer. I created a portfolio, and I got accepted into the Fashion Institute of Technology and started my learning about textiles and textile design there at that school.
Mm-hmm.
So I've since become a an art quilter, and now I am converting back to being a traditional quilter again.
You know, I just love your drawings. They're just so, you know, they have that painterly feel to them. Mm-hmm. And I love how everything's soft, and it's magical what you do. Tell me a little bit about Meadowlark, which is your fabric line with Wyndham, and how did that come about? How did you develop that? Because you have all this great background as a you know, training in fabric design.
Mm-hmm. For years, I have been trying to figure out how a home studio artist might be able to print in repeat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, when I was in school, I had access to tables with the right equipment and could easily just fit a silk screen into the side of the table, and it would just jigger down by, you know, equal measurements.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really an impediment to my being able to see how to do it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know, a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, I started trying to figure out how I could print in repeat without special equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And I also set the parameters for myself to figure out how to do this using easily accessible art material. So I started using fun foam, also known as craft foam.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Pencils, Thermofax screens, and carved rubber.
Mm-hmm.
So two different kinds of stamps. And the outside of the stamp became my registration mark. And it probably took me about 6 months to really figure the process out.
Mm-hmm.
And I printed one heck of a lot of cloth during that time, which is just my style. You know, I mean, I love to be deeply immersed in any of the projects I take on. So I started really working with dye, and I actually, you know, I used Procyon MX dye,
mm-hmm.
which is a synthetic dye that you can thicken to become more like paint using mm-hmm. sodium alginate, which is actually just seaweed.
Oh.
Right. Sounds all official, but it's really
yeah.
not. And the Procyon MX dye is a fickle lover,
mm-hmm.
but it's beautiful, and it gives you the hand of the cloth that we buy in stores. It just drapes nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different than working with acrylic paint or textile paint. But I did get into some problems. I hadn't at that point been really using a lot of dye, and I had holes in my methodology. So I contacted my good friend Carol Soderlund and asked her if she could please help me figure out what the holes or the leaks in my process mm-hmm. were. And she totally, like, whipped me into shape. And And it helped me to really focus on the designs themselves rather than, you know,
the
why
process.
I wasn't getting the results I wanted.
Yeah.
So I really like each of the designs in Metal Lark. I either carved or cut in order to figure out the process that I was creating. And it was really in response to questions that I was having in the use of dye. So like the bird print in Meadowlark has lots of overdyeing. And so I started asking lots of questions about how to apply one color to the next and still get a very crisp, beautiful color. But that also forced me to really work in layers and build the image up to look almost dimensional. Mm-hmm. So really, it was quite the creative exploration creating this line of fabrics.
Wow, I had no idea. I didn't really know that the originals that you had printed were your carvings and your wood blocks. So that is fascinating. I love it. It's got such a great, great look. Now, you work in a very small space, and I just love that you're trying to do what you do with very usable tools. But also, your workspace is small. And that doesn't stop you, does it? It doesn't stop you, does it, Melanie, to have a small workspace?
No, it does quite the opposite, actually. I'm just like, I'm challenged by having a small workspace. Let me figure out how to make even more. So I am extremely organized, and I value pegboard.
Yeah.
I really value pegboard. I have a lot of storage containers. Mm-hmm. I like drawers better than stackable storage containers because you can at least take a drawer out and look through it if you need to.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Between the pegboard and I really, like, I rotate through my art supplies on a very regular basis so that I really know where everything is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, I'm not much of a stash collector type person. Mm-hmm. I will collect the materials needed to make, to print, to carve, to that sort of thing, but not really fabrics. Mm-hmm. And even fabrics, I will go through them periodically. I will fold them. I will organize them according to color. But I find that really engaging with and keeping a set amount of supplies helps me remain super organized and ready to create or do whatever I want to do. I don't like looking for things. That is in the way of making things. So,
that's really true, isn't it? I mean, if you're constantly trying to find something, you're like, I can't make because I can't find it.
Right.
Now, we have just about a minute and a half. I wanted you to tell me what you're currently working on. What's your current project?
I am at deadline with my current book, which I am writing with Carol Soderlund.
Yeah.
Yay. It's only tentatively titled at the moment. Mm-hmm. It will be coming out in October 2015, this year.
Yeah.
And it's all about the print processes that we are using to create fabrics loosely printed in repeat and also something that we call puzzle print. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, the name of the book may well be Print Sessions. So I am very excited. We are both very excited about the information we are presenting.
That sounds super, super fantastic because this is not your first book. You have several other books. What is one of your other books that you could just share about?
Inspired to Quilt also uses Procyon MX dye and talks about printing and painting on whole cloth, cotton and silk organza in two layers. Mm-hmm. So that's really my baby. That's what started me writing books. Mm-hmm. And I really like the artwork in that book. So I would say that's probably my favorite that I have not yet written or published.
Right, right. That's right. The one that people can get hold of. So, and they can visit you where? Tell me where everybody can visit you at online.
Is MelanieTesta.com.
Okay. And you have a blog and you have your books listed there. And you also have workshops, right?
I am not teaching right now, actually.
Okay.
So
okay.
Once I complete writing this next book, I will begin teaching online rather than out in the wild.
Perfect. Perfect. That way more people can come see you.
Right. And I get to stay home and closer to
yeah.
the work studio.
Well, Melanie, this has been wonderful. I really appreciate you being able to pop in when you're right on deadline. I just loved it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, everybody needs to go out and visit Melanie and then take a look at her fabric called Meadowlark from Wyndham. It is delightful and you will want some. We're going to take a break with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by BabyLock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Heather Valentine is here to chat with me for the second half of the show, and we're going to talk a lot about education, quilting, sewing, all kinds of things. Her whole focus, Heather, is very much into the teaching part, you know, being able to share her passion for making things. And her whole site, The Sewing Loft, has tons of information. So I am really, really happy to have Heather come on, and we're just going to get right to it. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat. I appreciate being here.
You know, Heather, I love your one tagline. I think it's on your Facebook page that says, moving the needle forward one stitch at a time. That is just perfect.
Yeah, I think so many people struggle with taking that first stitch. So, you know, I want to just encourage people to just start. You know, it's just like putting your foot down on the gas pedal. Sometimes you just got to go.
You just have to do that. Tell me about the Sewing Loft. That's your site. It's called The Sewing Loft. You're the owner of it, the curator, the writer. Tell me why you created this spot on the internet.
Well, basically, over the years, I had been asked so many times for how I got started or just different advice on how to help people who were maybe afraid to get started. And I even, you know, had spoken to many within my little community, and they shared such fantastic sewing stories, but I basically wanted to take all of that goodness and put it all in one place to share, a place that everybody was considered a friend and basically they could learn from each other, no matter what the skill level was. We were all there to kind of help each other, more like a real sewing circle, but in today's time.
Yes. It's the online sewing circle. That's
Yeah, the virtual world.
The virtual world. And we can have everybody there. The room, we don't need a facility big enough. It's okay.
Absolutely.
I know. I've been to some groups where like, well, we're not big enough for everybody. And it's like, nope, we're big enough online. So you have a big, you have the focus of education and teaching. How did what you did before you start this to help you, before you started the site, how did you get inspiration on how to set it up? I mean, what's the format of it? Tell me a little bit more in depth.
Well, basically, before in my past life, I was in the apparel industry, and I was responsible for going out there and helping factories get things ready and making changes to their lines whenever there was a problem, and just figuring out different tips that would help remove the product along and make sure that everything looked the same. And I wanted to try to share little bits of that with the community. So for me, I kind of had a schedule that I share tips regularly. I'd like to have one place that everybody can say, oh gosh, it's late at night and I really want to get this little project done for Susie to wear tomorrow. And, you know, I can't call a friend, so maybe I can find it online. And I try to put it all in one place for people to locate. Because let's face it, we've all been there where it's, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning and you know you want to wear that outfit tomorrow or you want to give that gift and you need a lifeline. So,
yeah. So when they come there, if they're looking to do binding, how, you know, somebody's like, I'm having a problem with my binding. How would they find the information on your site?
Well, basically there's a search button that they could just type in specifically what they're looking for and it will populate all the posts that are related to that topic, or if it's one specific tip that they're looking for, I have a tips page. I think at this point I've got about 125 or more tips on there that can be related to anything from garment making to quilting to making stuffed dolls. So it's really a matter of knowing what your keyword is and then just typing it into the search button.
So what is one of your favorite, your all-time favorite sort of articles or, you know, that you've written for the site so far?
Well, one of my new passions is free motion stitching, and I think I would have to say my little bulldog pillow, and the reason why is because I actually drew the design freehand, and then I was able to take that freehand sketch and turn it into something that was thread-based. My original thought was that I would need to have it digitized, and it would take me a while because that's not something that I normally do, and I want to learn, but I don't have the skill set for that, and I wanted to make it a little bit more every day that anyone could do it, and seeing it kind of come together, it was the first big project that I had ever done using that method. And just kind of taking that first step was really hard for me. I was scared that I would kind of mess up. And I think a lot of stitchers out there feel that way. And, you know, I feel that way too at times. And I think that, you know, we're all in the same boat together. So I'm kind of proud of the way that it turned out. And, you know, it makes me feel good that I was able to push past it. Make it happen.
It's really adorable. So you drew the bulldog. So he's like sleeping with his little face and his little hands, you know, like, so you're looking straight on his face. And now did you, when you free motioned that, did you layer batting behind it? What was the technique you used to accomplish it?
I actually did it straight on the fabric with a wash away interfacing, so basically a wash away stabilizer. You know, you put the layer of wash away on it, and I basically drew my sketch, I traced over my sketch onto the stabilizer, and then laid that over my fabric and just stitched away, you know, and sometimes you have to pull away from it and really look at it and see, oh, should I maybe make it a little darker over here, a little lighter, you know, heavier over here? And you keep kind of adding. And then when it's all said and done, you give it a quick rinse and the stabilizer goes away and you're left with your fabric and stitching. So it was neat. I think that as I've done it several times after, I have actually added the batting to the backing, and I do like the way that it gives it a little bit more texture and dimension.
Yeah, it would be a little, right, it would like dig in then, the threads would into the batting, and you would have that sort of little bit of a shape happening versus on the fabric.
It's just a whole nother texture and a little bit more depth to the project. But as I said, I mean, that was my first time using it, and I think everybody has to just, you just got to try.
Just got to try. Right. It's just thread and fabric, right? You'll probably have more
on
the shelf. Unless maybe we're Melanie, because she has a small space, so she's very concise in what she keeps. But I'm sure she has some.
We can all find some to share.
Right. We can. Now, you have a lot of posts that are sort of, you know, 5 tips or 5, 10 ways to do this, you know, different things like that. How do you find the information? Like, let's say the one you have, which is pretty recent right now, is how to hang your mini quilt. You have 5 ways of how to hang a mini quilt. Do you think all these up, or do you ask people in your community to send you ways? You know, how do you figure that out?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I'm very big on community. So when I have something coming up, I ask. I just will put a shout out on Facebook or on Instagram and say, hey, this is what I'm working on. You know, is anybody else doing it? You know, maybe we can share a couple of tips. Or, you know, one day I mentioned something about the thread color and the tips that came pouring in. It's just wonderful because we all are going through the same things. We're all sharing. And, you know, I may know something that maybe could be helpful to you, but I'm sure you have something that you can share for me. And that's the whole, that to me is the beauty of a community and the beauty of what I had wanted to create. So I'm excited to say that it's really a combined effort.
It really works. Yay.
Yeah. One big circle of friends.
Yes. So do most of the people who, that you're, you know, putting a note out to, is that mostly done via your Facebook page, or do you actually have another place where people can join up?
No, I actually do everything on Facebook or Instagram. Really, it's open to everyone. It's not, you know, there's no private group, other than my pattern testing when I'm doing my patterns, and I just want to send it out to a couple of people to see if they have any feedback before I send it out into the world. You know, we all have to test and make sure they're right. But yeah, I send it out on Facebook, and everyone's there, and anybody can answer. And, you know, it's a matter of who's online and who's seeing or who has time to type, because a lot of them are doing other things. At the same time, they're looking at social media.
This is true. They're sneaking a peek while they're doing something else and go, oh, okay, I'll go check back later. So while we're on the community, and let's talk a little bit about Instagram, because I know that there's a lot of people that, first of all, they don't have smartphones or they don't have full feature phones. So, you know, it's kind of hard to do a place like Instagram for that group. But describe what it is so people know a little bit about it.
Oh, well, basically it's a photo sharing platform that anyone can follow each other and move around. I'm very new to it. I may have an account for, I don't know, probably a year or two, but I've only recently started kind of getting active on there. I'm finding it so exciting to see what other people are doing. So everyone shares their photos and we can comment back and forth and, hey, I really like that technique, and how did you do that? Or, wow, those color combinations are fantastic. Or, you know, I like to give kind of a glimpse on the inside life of my real life, not just what I, you know, shared on the blog. And the dog might be snoring in the office, or, you know, the kids might be outside playing. Or just the other day I found this monster spider, and, you know, it may not relate to everything, but it is a place that I happen to share a lot of my personal personal side as well.
And in a way, Heather, do you think that for some people that it becomes a little bit like a personal blog in a way? When people would blog in the beginning, nobody really blogged, their blogs weren't really businesses. And then the personal blogging seems like some of the people have taken it to Instagram, where they would share where they might be shopping. That's kind of what I do. It's like if I'm in the store and I was like, oh my gosh, look at this color combo, and you know, take a picture of it. Or like you share your dog. That's something you're not doing on your business site.
Yeah, it is true. It's kind of, it is very, very personal, or at least that's definitely the way that I use it. And and I can say I always feel like I want to be wherever you're shopping. You always find those amazing deals for, you know, 79 cents or whatever they are. I feel like I need to be in your back pocket when you're shopping these days.
I know. I always get that. Where is that? Where are you? Yeah. That's like...
yeah. What store are you at? And can you just pick me up three?
Right. So let's talk a little bit. We have just like a minute before we're going to take a break, and then you're going to come back and we're going to talk about some of the projects you've done for books and things like that. What is one of the top tutorials that people reference on your site?
Oh, I have a 15-minute skirt, and it is no pattern required. You can take the piece of fabric, wrap it around your body, add a little bit extra for seam allowance, and honestly, you can make it today and wear it tonight. And that happens to be one of the key projects that people keep coming back for. And we make it over and over in my house. I have two girls, and they wear them all the time.
Oh my gosh, that is so fun. I mean, is it friendly enough for, like, you know, all of us size people?
Yes, it is literally a mini skirt. So, you know, it doesn't have to be too mini, but, and it's just elastic on the top. There's no zipper. It's very easy for anyone. It's straight seams only. And you can make it today and have a hot date tonight.
All right. Oh, my goodness. Okay, I have to go look at my fabric now while we're going to take I can see it over my right shoulder here while I'm sitting at the computer. Okay, so we're going to take a little break, Heather, and then we're going to be back, okay?
Okay.
So this is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and after the break, Heather Valentine from the Sewing Loft is going to be right back to share some more tips and tricks.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
What other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have Heather Valentine of the Sewing Loft. Heather, you have an exciting newly published quilt in a book. Tell me about that.
I
do. I'm part of Fun Size Quilts, and the book was released just a couple of weeks ago, and I'm excited to say that it's a quilt, so that's really fun for me since apparel is my background. Mm-hmm. I was super nervous when they asked me. I actually wrote them back and said, really, May, are you sure? So they were super excited to have it. It's a mini size quilt, more of a fat quarters, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it is it's called Garden Variety, and it focuses on different techniques. So it's flowers, and it has some reverse applique, direct applique, embroidery, and some couching on it. So it's been really fun, and I loved picking out the bright colors to create it.
You really packed a lot into a little quilt with all the different techniques. It's so adorable.
Thank you. Well, you know, there's so much talent out there in the quilting world, and I'm just in awe every day when I see the amazing things that are out there, that I was so nervous when they actually asked me to join the book that I knew that I needed to focus on what was my background and my strengths mm-hmm. were. And I love all the different techniques. So that made me feel more comfortable with the process because I was very nervous to be included. Very excited, aww, but also very nervous.
I think all of us, for the first time we're published anywhere, it is nerve-wracking. You know, your first this or your first that. It's like, you know, then you get it under your belt and you're like, okay. Now tell me, let's talk about couching, because I think that's something a lot of people haven't tried, but it's such an effective thing to do. Can you tell me how you go about couching?
Well, in the project, I used a little piece of colored rat tail and just some embroidery thread and did a little loop from side to side about every, every half an inch on the quilt, because I didn't want you to see too much of it. But basically, mm-hmm. you're taking an embroidery needle and going up one side over the rat tail and back down the other side, and just continue all the way around, basically securing it to your main fabric. It's very simple.
How are you securing the I'll use the rat tail as yarn or like a ribbon kind of thing. How do you secure it to the background? Did you glue it down or pin it?
I did not glue it. I actually pinned it kind of in place as I was sewing it, and then just used my overlaying stitches to keep it in place for the finished quilt.
And did you draw where you wanted it to be on your fabric background, or did you just freehand it?
I drew it on the fabric with a heat erasing pen, so that if I didn't go exactly on the line,
right,
I would be able to remove it. And I just kind of freeformed it. I think that sometimes, even when we have something in our mind, we have to see where all the fabrics and materials kind of speak to you and where they want to be. It's not just, you know, about making that square block fit in that round hole. You have to kind of listen to everything around you.
Now, you actually are out teaching now in different places. What kind of things are you teaching?
Well, actually, I just taught at SoSouth earlier this year, and I worked on, I shared one of my new patterns, which is a scrap bucket pattern, and it pretty much takes every scrap that you have in your studio space, creates it into fabric, and then we made it into a bucket that you can now fill it all back up with all your new scrap. So it's kind of my way of keeping the area nice and tidy, but still utilizing everything you have.
I love that, because, you know, I'm thinking, I have seen some scrap bags. You would have very large buckets from some of these people if they used all of the scraps they owe to this.
I'm a little bit of a hoarder myself, I'm not going to lie.
Oh,
my
goodness.
I was asked recently what was the smallest size scrap that I kept. And mm-hmm. I said it was on the board. I go, gosh, it's so hard to answer. It really depends on what the fabric is. Mm-hmm. But I have resigned myself to, if it's not 2x2, it's got to go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty much, that's my smallest unit as well. It's just, I don't have space for more than that. It's crazy. So as a designer, because you have a store with your patterns and everything, what is it that you, tell us what you like to design. What is your look, your sort of go-to thing?
I like really simple things that somebody can sit down and pretty much stitch in a setting, like in one sitting at the machine. I've never been very good at the long and large projects. It just kind of doesn't keep my attention, and when I walk away and come back, if I'm not excited to start it, I'll never finish it.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I have so many UFOs. So I like to keep them small, friendly, and really things that even the beginner sewer can work on.
Mm-hmm. What are your most favorite patterns you've ever designed?
Ever designed, I would say my owl backpack. That's definitely one of the fun ones that I started early on. But one of my most favorite to create, mm-hmm, would be my headbands. And the reason why I like them so much is because I can use any fabric combination to make it work. So I can use all different colors, and you only need smaller pieces. So if you have an outfit and you have like just an extra little piece left over, mm-hmm, you can turn it into something else. So they happen to be my favorite to sit down and make, because I can stitch out a whole bunch of them in one shot, and my kids are happy to be the recipient of them at the end of the day.
What do you use to keep them firm, the headbands, so they're not, you know, you must have something in the band part.
Oh, no, it's just fabric that's tied back. Oh. So I use, if you wanted to make it a little bit stiffer, which both my kids have very coarse hair, so they don't need anything extra and thick in their hair, but you could put a layer of interfacing behind it. We don't really need that. I just suggest folding back the fabric and creating a nice edge for your hem, and then there's a flower on the center, so that gives it a little bit of stability. And the applique, you can use a double-sided fusible, which could give it a little bit additional rigidity.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That's because it gives people options, because some people's hair is very fine and it would need a little stiffener, I would imagine.
Keep it in place.
Yeah. So one of the things that you've hosted with your online community is your swaps. What are those like? What do you do?
The swaps are super fun. So we pick a topic. We've done zipper pouches. Right now we're in the midst of doing mini quilts. I'm excited to put together a mini quilt wall in my studio. So I thought it would be fun for all of us to exchange. You sign up for it, and you are eventually given a swap partner. It takes a little bit of time for me to go through everything and pair everyone up. I try to pair everyone within the same country that they're in, so that it kind of saves everybody on shipping.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can, everybody leaves little hints of things that they like, favorite colors that they really don't care for.
Mm-hmm.
With the mini quilt, we are doing, if somebody would like a holiday theme, that is also an option. And we tried something new this time with a flicker mosaic. So that was actually really fun, where you could pick your favorite items on Flickr, and someone like me could go spy and see what my swap partner liked, and then possibly tailor my mini quilt for them into something in keeping with their style.
Oh, that's did people like the mosaics? Did they find it useful?
Yes, many have been saying that they're very excited about it, although I did have several, it was probably mixed feelings, because several have said that they are not on Flickr, where others were super excited to see them. So this was the first time that I've tried it with the mosaics, and maybe next time it'll be a little bit, maybe I'll have everyone do it. So I would say there weren't that many, maybe like 30 or 40 had actually been created.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, they're fun to look at, so
right,
beautiful, and everyone finds the most amazing things.
That's what I love the mosaics myself. I'm really into that. I love being able to get those little, take the images tiny, so you get this whole, like a table of them, and you can get, you know, a table 4x4 of all these little bitty images. It really gives you a powerful visual, doesn't it, of a person's taste.
Yeah, they're beautiful. And I love to see what everyone else finds, because I may not have seen it before.
It's sort of like the Pinterest boards in a way, except that they're tighter, because on the board, at least you can get like a couple of rows at once and see what somebody's put in their, you know, folders.
Within the community actually taught me a new thing with the mosaics. I didn't realize that you could actually link every site from your photos. So then down at the bottom, it'll tell you where all of those photos are from. So that was new to me. I'm just learning that now. Flickr's still, you know, we all learn things new each day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and sometimes they improve things so that it's easier. You know, a tool that you're using all the time, all of a sudden it's easier because they've added something to it. You know, Heather, this has been just an amazing amount of fun. I love getting to know more about your site, and tell us again where people can come and sort of the best ways to hang out with you.
Well, I'm always floating around on Facebook, so they can find me at The Sewing Loft on Facebook, or they can stop by and visit me on the blog, which is The Sewing Loft blog. And I am always floating around lately. I feel like I'm sharing a lot of photos on Instagram, and I would love to chat with everybody. Stop by and say hello.
Yes. Oh, I will see you there. All the places. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Pat. I appreciate it. So much fun.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit American Patchwork at allpeoplequilt.com. You can come visit me at patsloan.com. Sign up for my newsletter. It's on the right side. You can sign up for American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's newsletter. Both of us send out on a fairly regular basis and have lots of cool information in it. And I will be back next week with a new show. And I'm very excited. Got a lot of really cool information. So once again, we will see you online. Everybody's on Facebook, so you can go check out from our sites the links. It'll take you right there to the right page so you can find us. I'm Pat Sloan, and I will see you next week.
Visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.